Returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice, I'm Steve Lerman. You can listen to this program at 96.5 FM in the Sacramento area, or go to axissacramento.org, or download it from greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com. If you're just joining us, we're listening to Greenpeace co-founder Rod Marini sharing his story with David Michael Swanson.
Greenpeace and activist organizations, they're known for organizing demonstrations that could result in members receiving legal punishment or even physical harm. Mm-hmm. You know, ramming a boat that could result in some people being on board actually hurting themselves or hurting somebody else on the other boat, or at the very least, there could be legal ramifications for that. So were you ever in a situation when you were with Greenpeace where there was the very real potential of you going to jail for a long period of time or having physical harm inflicted upon yourself?
Oh, yeah. You know, you... When we were going to Amchit, our plan was to go right into the territory. I mean, we're talking sitting within a few miles of the test zone. You're going to get, if the bomb goes off, you're dead. You know, how they dealt with the Greenpeace three ships that was constantly sailing into the nuclear test zone, they would board it. They would actually literally pick the ship right out of the water and put it on another ship.
Oh, wow.
And cart it off and then put the crew in jail. And if it wasn't for media, I mean, the story of Marie Horn, she was one of the women on board along with David McTaggart. And they boarded the ship, and she was sitting in the front of the ship, and she took all the pictures of them boarding the ship and beating the crap out of the two men that were on board. And then they saw her taking pictures. She slid down this hatchway, locked the hatch, and they came in from the bottom of the ship, and they busted the door down. And by the time they got her, they grabbed her and grabbed the camera, but the camera was a dummy camera. So she had put in the real camera in a hidden compartment on the ship. So later on, she was in jail for about 2 weeks, and then there was a complete uproar in Canada because, you know, Canadians are being arrested by the French. And so she said, I'm having my period. I need to go back into the ship on the ship and get my medical bag and stuff. And so they walked her to the ship, and she walked into the room, and she had a moment alone. And so she grabbed the camera, took the film, and she inserted the canister in her vagina.
Oh, wow.
So when she finally got released, they released the film, and it showed him, the French, coming on their Zodiacs and boarding the ship, and then they had batons out and beating the crap out of David McTaggart, and he was all bloodied, and that film got out into the media. So this is kind of the, you know, this is when you're talking about putting on a show, you have to have your cameras all lined up.
So did she have the film within her that entire period of time she was in jail?
Yes.
Oh, my God. That is incredible.
Well, it was a good week where she had the film.
Yeah. Wow. So I remember when I first met you, you told me a story about how federal agents would try and infiltrate Greenpeace to get certain information about your activities. And you told me about a special method for actually discovering these government moles. So I was hoping
I should tell this story. We would have group pictures. And of course, the agent would be the one that wants to kind of disguise his identity, and sometimes they would not want to show up for a group picture, or they stood in behind somebody, or they would wear sunglasses and that kind of stuff. So, and if we were really sure that we were getting that way, and then we pass it over to our security team, and the security team had some LSD, and they would drop the LSD in their coffee and then take him into the communications room and have a little chat with him, and the door would be locked, and they would just sit there and see what happened, and that was the best way of getting a confession, and we knew exactly what was going on the other side.
So what are these Greenpeace members saying to this potential government agent after they're in the room, that the government agent's now on acid?
Yeah.
So what are they saying? What kind of questions are they asking?
Well, they're saying who you work for, and what were your instructions. You have to realize that Sea Shepherd and Greenpeace are probably the prime targets for every secret service on the planet. They don't want to be caught off guard. I mean, that's the whole purpose of having a secret service, is to know what's going to happen. And when Greenpeace, took on the Shell oil company, which I think is one of the proudest moments I've had of Greenpeace, is when they took on the oil rig, and hung banners and everything, and the Russians came down really hard on them, and they arrested everybody and seized the ship. Well, that's perfect. That's what you want. You want to create a long-term drama. And that story would hit the news for 2 or 3 months. That's exactly what we wanted the Russians to do in order to focus, shine light on that issue.
But the courage that it takes for these people to fight huge corporations or government or organizations with that much power, to be beaten or thrown in jail for an extended or unknown period of time, the courage that it takes to do that is... it's huge. It's absolutely huge to do that. So were you ever scared that you were going to be beaten to the point of possibly, losing an eye like somebody did, or that you would be put in jail for months, years?
Yeah, it's you know, I think we were the first reality TV, and there's drama, and it's real drama. It's not fake. You know, David lost the sight of one eye, you know, so, but these are things that happen on a ship, and you just suck it up.
Apparently, yeah. So, mentioned earlier, Greenpeace is a multinational organization. It is now quite wealthy, and in many ways, it's built itself into this global activism brand. Mm. But when you first founded it, not nearly as huge, not nearly as wealthy. So my question is, do you think this type of growth makes it more difficult for an organization like Greenpeace to stay true to its original vision?
They tend to lose their original vision. When Greenpeace was formed in 1972, it was to shorten the coming dark age. And, you know, this is part of the mythology of Greenpeace. Part of that thing was to create a war chest of money, so only to be used when the dark age came for various purposes.
Yeah.
And by and large, you know, they do follow the philosophy, because Greenpeace is saving pools of biodiversity on this planet. Greenpeace is saving the Great Bear Rainforest. It's saving the Amazon. They're trying to save the Arctic from drilling of oil. They're biodiversity areas that are really important for, if the planet does collapse, we need those pools of biodiversity to spread out and shorten this coming dark age, you know. Mm-hmm. So
you do feel that it's staying relatively true to its original vision?
It is, but I think,
vision.
You know, if you asked the ED about that, he wouldn't be able to articulate something that I just said. They're caught up in the present, but they don't understand how they got to that stage. It's just like, that's what Greenpeace does, and they're following the formula, which is great. They just better be prepared for the scenarios that we painted out back in the early years. What's going to happen to this planet? Because we are going to enter a dark age. The environmental movement's going to have to be politically ready for that moment when it arrives.
And do you think that disconnect between the people that are running Greenpeace today and the people that started Greenpeace, do you think that disconnect in the philosophy and with the mythology is based on the fact that Greenpeace is so powerful and wealthy now?
Yes, it is. I mean, the war chest got raided and it disappeared in fancy ships and all kinds of stuff, you know, so I'm concerned about that. But when you let go of an organization, it's really difficult. I wanted to keep control of it and you know, hold on to the copyright and so on, but I was outvoted in that aspect, and so we had Allen Ginsberg come by, and we were drinking beer with him, and Bob said to Allen, "This is just how can we create this international organization?" And he looked at us and he says, "Don't let the power freeze in your fist. Let it go." That was part of the, you know, the transition into a corporate type of mentality.
So as an activist, you're trying to create positive social change, or at least prevent negative social change. So what is the greatest change you feel that you've ever helped create?
Well, we changed the world. I mean, obviously, a group of people, anybody can go out there and change the world. This is the message, basically. You got to get together with 2, 3, 4, or 5 smart people, say, okay, we're going to take this project on, and we're going to put everything in motion and set up your revenue centers and in your expense centers, and, you know, have a bit of business savvy, and then have goals and mythology and everything put together like Greenpeace did, and go out there and change the world. It's possible. Direct action is like organized love. You know, it's full of sex and rock and roll, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, I think that's a good promotional soundbite there to have people get involved with something they care about.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for doing this interview. I really enjoyed it, Rod.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
How can people be so heartless? How can people be so cruel? Easy to be hard, easy to be cold. Oh, how can people have no feelings? How can they ignore their friends? Easy to be proud.
not sleeping, and there's no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you. Oh, I know that evening's empire has returned into sand, and it's from my hand. Left me blindly here to stand, but still not sleeping. My weariness amazes me, I'm branded on my feet. I have no one to meet, and the ancient empty streets too dead for dreaming. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning I come following you. Take me on a trip upon your magic swirling ship. My senses have been stripped, my hands can't feel the grip, my toes too numb to step. Wait only for my booties to be wandering. My own parade, cast your dancing spell my way. I promise to go under it. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song with me. I'm not sleepy and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song with me. In the jingle jangle morning, I come following you. Smoke rings of my mind, down the foggy ruins of time, far past the frozen leaves, down haunted, frightened trees, out to the windy beach, far from the twisted reach of crazy sorrow. Dance to dance beneath the diamond sky, with one hand waving free, silhouetted by the sea, circled by the sunny sand, with all memories fade, living deep beneath the. Let me forget about the day until tomorrow. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning I come following you.
I lost track of my size. I think I'm huge now. I don't know why I still seem to fit inside my car, 'cause I'm not the same size. I know I'm huge now. Ever since I was a kid, I'd lay in bed at night, and it would seem that my body got bigger. Always in the morning, I'd be back to normal. But look at me now, I'm so enormous. Little persons all around me.
give in to my appetite. So just a salad for me, because I'm still very lonely. Mikhail Baryshnikov was in the line at the supermarket, and he was so small. Since I was a kid, I'd lay in bed at night, and it would seem that my body got bigger. Always in the morning, I'd be back to normal, but look at me now, I'm so enormous. Little persons all around me sweep the streets and run along. It's so lonely being different.
Again, don't know where, don't know where.